onto your hats. It's another 2 hours coming at you of Bathrobe Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor at 96.3 FM on April 18th, 2002. Special guest Lydia Harari will be with us, if I can get her name right. Eventually I will. So stay tuned, and we've also got a call in from Brother John in Las Vegas, if he's able to avoid the authorities. All that and more.
Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, playing Russian roulette with you, but not with a second-hand Saturday night special. Now downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino Gaponero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos to beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown with Brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown. Downtown when you're brown,
the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out
by the boom, boom, boom of
tricked out Impalas and carried out mini trucks as the cat calls
of oppression are heard
up and down Santa Clara streets. And beautiful Latinos
cut five or 16
in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver,
hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown, you're brown. The muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out in dollars and carried out many drugs as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets. And beautiful Latinos cut 5 or 6 feet in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. To be, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and round for no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th in Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your name, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you'll get a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you,
you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. 96.3 FM as we struggle with the new board here and the new mic. I'm fiddling with the dials and hoping I'm doing an okay job. This is 96.3 FM, free radio. This is 2 hours of civil rights on the streets of Santa Cruz. We're not going to talk about overseas problems, or they may come up periodically and incidentally, and of course they're there as we're speaking. People are being killed. People are being oppressed. People are fighting back. We're going to talk about what's happening, though, in Santa Cruz. My name is Robert Norse. I do 2 hours of this, and you're welcome to join me both by listening to the radio and by calling in. Call-in number is 427-3772. Again, 427-3772 if you'd like to be a part of the show. My special guest today is, let me get this right, Lydia Harara. Harari. I'm sorry about that, Lydia. Lydia is one of the founders of Pomona Food Not Bombs when it was operational a couple years back. And she's also a worker with, well, she knows a lot about local drug use, and she's worked with folks in jail. And I guess you're going off at 7:30 with an empowerment project from UCSC to check out the local cells. And I mean the prison cells or the jail cells. So say a few words into the mic to make sure we actually have you.
Hello?
Say a little louder.
Hello?
That's better. Yeah, just shout it right out there.
All right.
You actually have to almost kiss the foam rubber here in order to get out to the audience. It's kind of an erotic experience, or perhaps a neurotic experience. In any case, Lydia, you were working, well... we went through a lot of subjects when I talked to you on the phone a couple of days ago. I guess I ran into you because you were doing a paper. You tried to get in touch with me because you wanted some info on Larry Templeton.
Right.
To look into the issue of drug use and drug abuse in Santa Cruz among the homeless. And Larry, of course, is the head of Camp Paradise, or the former Camp Paradise, or the future Camp Paradise. I guess it's fair to say Camp Paradise. You tried to reach him. You weren't quite able to get in touch with him. I guess you guys kind of missed each other, called back, and so forth. What was that all about, and did you ever get your paper written on that one?
Well, this class was called Health Inequality, and what I needed to do was pick some subject about health and relate it to local community. So I'm specifically interested in drugs and the way our society deals with the problem of drugs and those that...
Now, by drugs, you don't mean the really toxic drugs like nicotine and alcohol. You're talking about the illegal drugs that produce toxic results because they jail people, like heroin and methamphetamines, cocaine, things of that sort.
Yeah, exactly. This town in Santa Cruz is really bad for heroin. Most of the cops say that this area is the worst in America. I'm not sure, you know.
Well, it's interesting. You say it's bad, the cops are bad for heroin. I always, not being a person who has a lot of heroin dealers in front of my house, Phil Bear and I are always squaring off on this one. Phil is a former 60s activist who still lines up with me on a number of issues, like supporting housing for Latino residents, and opposing boondoggle projects like the Dolphin Lee debacle and the beach flats, and opposing city council abuses and the fact that city council won't do anything about the sleeping ban law that it has in place, and other things. But he and I disagree on the issue of drugs. He lives in the beach flats. He's a landlord there and a resident there, and he is very concerned about the violence and the sordid nature of drug dealing happening right on his street when it happens. And he complains about police they're not being enough policing. And my, of course, response to this is, what about decriminalizing these drugs, setting up treatment centers? And he says, sure, but, you know, what do you do in the meantime? You can't have these folks around. You have friends who are heroin users, people you know who are heroin users, and you've heard this characterization of Santa Cruz. I heard this a couple of years ago as, you know, the major heroin center, and I don't know, on the coast, or, you know, one of the, by population, very heavy heroin use area. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I happen to feel that if you want to get heroin in this town, it's pretty easy. not to say that you don't have major paranoia trying to get it. Basically, the beach flats, you know, if you can't find anyone else, you go down there and walk around and pretty much stereotypically...
Jiva, man, Jiva.
Yeah, stereotypically, that's how you would find it.
Is there a lot of heroin use here, more than, let's say, in other cities? I'm not saying necessarily...
I don't really know about that. I mean, I only really started researching drugs and stuff like that after I took a class up at UCSE called Drugs and Society with Craig Reinerman.
Mm-hmm.
And that just opened my eyes to a world of complex issues.
Like?
Just like how everything is interrelated, poverty and the healthcare system and lack of in this country. And
in this city?
In this city, in this country especially, you know.
Tell us about this city and the lack of healthcare here, if you have any experience with that.
Oh, well, personally, I know someone that started using heroin on a daily basis because his back spazzed out, and, you know, trying to get Metacruz is fairly easy, except, you know, the services pretty much suck. You know, doctors see someone that looks like a typical drug user, and then, I mean, like, tattoos and, you know, anything like that, they automatically think you're trying to get free drugs. And so this person ended up having to use drugs because the doctors would not prescribe him any sort of medication that, you know, would be beneficial.
He had to illegally seek heroin because he wasn't able to get a painkiller from a prescription from the doctor?
Right. What I found mainly is that doctors are so paranoid of people becoming addicted to painkillers that they turn people away that actually have pain because you can't prove pain. It's hard, and they wouldn't give him a CAT scan or MRI or anything. And so, yeah, basically, he self-medicated, and hundreds, if not thousands of people in this county do that. And it's really scary because doctors are pretty much turning these people into drug addicts.
So you're saying the refusal of doctors to prescribe adequate medication, and we've actually had some people on the air, the Fishers pharmacists up in, Northern California, and the Millers and Dr. Fisher, I'm thinking of, they were on our show. They are they were arrested for murder for prescribing medications, serious painkilling medications, and then one of the patients died. And essentially was another one of these kind of stings from the DEA. Why don't you put on these earphones? We're about to get a call here.
It's a complicated subject. I mean...
Take it. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I just wanted to throw in my two cents about, about drug use and...
Talk real loud. I don't think we have much...
You don't have me, huh?
We got the dials are barely moving. Talk louder.
Okay, I'll talk as loud as I possibly can.
There you go, because we got virtually nothing on the dial, but I'm hoping we're coming through. Maybe we can let... Can you hear us on the radio? Do you have a radio there?
Can you hear us on the radio? Hey, can you guys hear this on the radio? They can't tell.
They can't tell.
They say they can't hear shit, so you'll just have to repeat what I say on the air after I'm done. Or something.
Yes, ma'am.
If that's okay.
I'm looking for, it's a new board, otherwise I try to boost the uptake.
Well, maybe you can mess with it for a minute while I say what I wanted to say.
Go for it.
And that is that I wanted to just throw out there that sometimes people take heroin, possibly. I know that I choose to take marijuana, and other people choose to take other drugs, as opposed to drugs that you can get prescribed to you from a doctor, and because we'd prefer to take that kind of a drug than take the drugs that they prescribe us. And I just wanted to say that because I think that people should have their own choice to health care, and they don't really get a choice when they're not given any health care or when they're given prescription drugs that the doctor won't let them get other kinds of drugs that they choose.
Okay, yeah, I think we actually can even hear you now, so
did you guys get that?
Maybe repeating.
We got some of it. Do you want a reaction from our guest?
Yeah.
What
do you think of that?
Summarize it in a sentence, if you want to put it in a question form.
Okay, what do you think of how some people might possibly be using drugs that could get health care or that do have health care because the drugs that they get from the doctor are not the kind of drug that they want to take? Or not the it's not the way that they want to take the drug, and do you think that people should be able to choose what kind of health care that they use? Like myself, I want marijuana instead of Vicodin.
Right.
You know?
So, I don't think that happens when you get health care from the government as it is right now, because I have Medi-Cal or whatever, and if they don't give me what I want, they make me take what they want.
Okay, let's see what Lydia says about that.
I'm gonna listen, okay?
You want to stay on the air?
Off the air.
Off the air.
Uh-huh. Okay. Bye.
Fair enough. Thank you.
That's a really good point. Should I talk now?
You
okay.
Please,
some guy I know, he went to the doc to Medi-Cruz, to the county facility to get painkillers for his back or just something to figure out what the problem is. They gave him muscle relaxers, which pretty much zonked him out, took away his spirit, you know, didn't know where his soul went, pretty much. I don't really know what the deal is. I don't know. I think people definitely need to be involved more with their health care, and the county, Medi-Cruz, all that kind of stuff, Medi-Cal, they don't have room for that. It's just so many people have bad health care, and you stand in a line, wait to see a doctor for hours, and then you get 5 minutes of their time, and it made me cry going with him. It really made me cry a lot, just seeing how much they thought he was a piece of shit, pretty much, you know?
So they treated him badly as an individual, but what about our caller's concern that she, for instance, would prefer to be able to use marijuana, and indeed it's supposed to be legal in this state
right.
and in a number of other states to use medical marijuana, but in fact we have a... Perhaps our caller can let us know if she's had difficulties using a medical marijuana. I know that it does have a cost. You have to pay a doctor $100-$150
mm-hmm.
bucks in order to get a medical marijuana card of some sort. Although there are exceptions. I think I know someone who was able, after repeated attempts going to a doctor, finally bringing a friend with her to kind of say, what the hell are you guys doing? I need medical marijuana for my particular condition. Just acknowledge at least that I've asked you for that, and I think that was sufficient, and then she began to get medical marijuana. But again, the question is, I don't think either of us disagree. I mean, the answer is yes, obviously. I mean, for me, what's your answer on that?
My answer is yes, definitely.
Uh-huh. We're sort of, we're all in the choir here, and we're singing together. But the problem is, we're singing to a bunch of tone-deaf zombies who are intent on increasing the number of marijuana arrests, just to talk again about that. And we're actually talking about more serious drugs that actually can addict you in a more debilitating and dangerous way. Of course, not as dangerous as the legal drugs, alcohol and nicotine, that actually kill hundreds of times more people per year, if not thousands of times more people
yes.
per year, than heroin and all these other, boogeyman drugs put together. But how long have you been involved with folks who are drug users, and what has that changed? Has that opened your eyes? Have some myths sort of fallen away as a consequence of that?
Yes and no. I've met people that when I'm talking about drugs, I don't even think marijuana is a drug. I think marijuana is great. All the scientific things that prove it doesn't work or it does. I mean, basically it does, because there's thousands, millions of people that use it. There's no one's ever died from it. So, yeah, but I'm talking about heroin. And, heroin is the best painkiller that exists. And people that have debilitating pains use it, Like, Vicodin doesn't even do it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I forgot what I was trying to say.
Well, I think you were talking about... should heroin be available? I mean, I guess the caller didn't ask about heroin. The caller asked about marijuana, but I think a lot of us, I for one, feel that these other medications should obviously be available for medical conditions. I mean, there is no question why, in the name of anything, would you ever deny people medications that they need,
right.
except that you are in the middle of a corporate police crime racket where, the money is to be made through these huge drug reform or denial programs, through the court system that is a billion-dollar industry or million-dollar industry of getting people, quote, off of drugs. Instead of addressing root causes and dealing with it through a medical model, you have a criminalization model where more and more people, as I said, are harassed. Even under Proposition 36, I heard today, Proposition 36, for those who don't know, is the proposition that requires courts to put
first time...
First
and second time, heroin and...
All people that were arrested for drugs.
All drug possession. And for sale or just for possession?
Probably not sales, yeah. Depending on the amount. I can't imagine. Maybe if the person was under the influence and was selling, I'm not sure.
Right, but the point is that possession has been reduced from... they've tried to decriminalize possession in terms of setting up a mandatory medical model. What I heard from this fellow who is quite knowledgeable, he's actually spoken on the radio about it, he's talked about a close friend of his who has a heroin problem, was essentially told, even though this was her first time in front of the courts, that because she had previously been in front of the courts, prior to Proposition 36, they decided she wouldn't get, I guess, the two or three times you get, I guess, two or three opportunities to come back. That's what I've heard. It's not just one opportunity, but you get several. That this was her last opportunity. If she failed on this particular drug program, she would be sent to
prison.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. No, I remember what we were talking about. It has my stereotypes been broken down. Mm-hmm. And in terms of my close friends, yes. They're, you know, beautiful people that just got sucked into this problem because of a whole bunch of messed up societal problems. You know, it's... But I've met a whole bunch of... shady people that are, you know, rip everyone off just so they can get high. It's a huge issue, and it's hard to, like, say anything without stereotyping a whole group of people. There's, like, the people that are there because they have mental problems. There's the people that have debilitating, you know, physical illnesses. There's a whole bunch of, like, you know, veterans that got messed up and now they don't know how to deal. There's just tons of people that, it's hard to break down into one group.
How long, Lydia, have you been involved with this, the drug scene, in terms of grappling with this issue, going to a jail in order to talk to folks and try to... What are you going to be doing, for example, at 7:30? What's your job?
It's not really a job. It's an independent study course that me and my friend set up. It's through UCSC. We're getting credit for it, but it's not supervised by anyone specifically. I mean, a teacher had to sign on the dotted line, basically, to let us do it, but it's self-directed. What we're doing tonight is we're working with... How do I describe this? We're working with about 25 women tonight. Hopefully, they'll come. It's called Exercising Your Power, and what we do is we start off with dance and aerobics to get endorphins flowing, and then we're making collage journals, and in the journals, you know, well, first of all, art's a great way to find out what these women like, which is it's better almost than talking, because you can really see what they're into, and then we read certain, I don't know, chapters and books, and we talk about them. And
these are folks who have drug problems, or just are trying to find their power generally?
Not specifically. Some of them are in there for drugs. Someone's in there for welfare fraud, you know. Basically, most people are there for bullshit.
These are people who are in jail.
In the county jail, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a minimum security facility for women. But
Blaine
these,
Street.
Yeah, that's Blaine Street. But these women are in the maximum security.
Ah.
Some of them are there for, like, their own, like, safety. Some of them, like, tried to run away from Blaine Street. Just people that need more security, or people that earn
in the jail
medication and stuff like that.
Jail wants to hold them, so when they ran away from Blaine Street, it was for the jail's security rather than for their
security. Yeah, pretty much.
Right. What are the main crimes that these women are being held for?
I don't know. We've just been doing this for 2 weeks, and I didn't want to pry too much until I get some trust going. The only thing is I messed up, because I'm not going to be able to build too much trust, because people are coming and going every single day. Mm-hmm. So from what I've heard, it's like some are there for heroin, quite a few, especially people that grew up in this area.
Right.
I know someone that's in there for welfare fraud, someone that's in there for, like, credit card fraud. But basically the police pretty much fuck everybody's shit up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're given free range to say whatever they want in police reports. And with that information, the women are tried. So that's the deal with that, and it's pretty sad most of the time.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I don't know if you heard about this guy who had a big problem in his head, like a major pain, and no one could deal with it, no doctor could deal with it. So he took a gun and was going to kill himself because it was such excruciating pain, and he actually shot out the tumor that was in his head,
oh my
and he
God.
Died.
Wow.
So in other words, if you don't have autonomy over your own self to decide as a mature adult what you want to do with yourself, whether you want to drink a quart of vodka or, you know, 10 bottles of beer or whatever it is, or smoke marijuana, it doesn't really matter. See, the whole point is it's all in the realm of free choice and individual sovereignty. So our government, we're all enslaved in this prison society anyway, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems to me that we have limited options. We all have to make money or else we're out in the street and we're considered really below dignity and also, like, worse than an animal. Yeah, and I think that's totally ludicrous that, say, someone wants to take their life because they just decided that for whatever reason they can't stand something anymore. Whether they want to give themselves heroin or kill themselves or have someone else give them a dose of something so they'll die, you know, it's nothing worse than a suicide bomber or dropping bombs on Afghanistan. It's no different, you know, it's just a grander scale. We don't go crazy about what's going on over there as far as the death and destruction that's really mayhem over there. And if one individual wants to do something with their life, I think that's what ultimate sovereignty is all about, and that's what freedom ultimately is all about, if within the realm of that choice.
The only problem is when people want to get off of drugs or, you know, seek help for something, and they're told that they can't. I believe in sovereignty, definitely, in personal choice. I'm just saying when people want to do something that'll change their situation and they can't because of lack of funds, to me that's criminal. You know, when they want to get off of drugs and they're told you can't, we don't, you know, have money in the system for you, you know, you're going to have to deal with it yourself. A lot of people can't, and that's what...
Yeah, you mean get off, say if they're addicted to something, if they can't get off it and they want
yeah,
to...
Yeah, yeah. Or if they have cancer, oh, sorry, you know, there's nothing we can do for you.
I think it boils down to the pharmaceutical companies and the machine, you know, munitions manufacturers basically, to me, rule this country and rule the world. And basically, they've taken away our freedom to be at least sovereign over ourselves.
Caller, what do you say to the concerns that this climate creates a youthful heroin culture for young people, and that this is a danger for minors, and that this is something that has to be stopped? This is the argument that was used downtown. I talked yesterday with a man who noted that there have been, I guess it's CNET or DEA stings downtown for small marijuana dealers, the same people that Matisse Selman and Alibaba wanted to run away from, the two kiosks, you know, in front of New Leaf Market that they were trying to get rid of down there.
Yeah.
But what about the issue of the miners? I mean, what...
Well, the key is that... This is the key about the miners. The key is the miners have to know what's true. And what's true is adults are having trouble in this world, surviving and coping. That's what the kids have to know. Whether they have to see someone shooting heroin, I'm not going to say. But the point is, it's real. And if our economic system is unjust and people are suffering because of the injustice, then people, children included, have to know about it. Because that the first step to change is awareness. And unfortunately, our society likes to put everyone into a little movie box and watch fantasy movies and take themselves into some fairyland. And people do it every weekend.
Now, taking the devil's advocate view again, are you a Santa Cruz resident?
20 years.
And do you have, what part of town are you in?
West Side.
So what if you saw hookers walking up and down in your street and people selling heroin in your block?
Right.
Would you be concerned? And your neighbors said, you know, my kids go to school every day. I'm worried that, you know, they're going to be, they're going to be exposed not just to the sight of this, but
right.
That there's a, you know, I don't know. Are you saying that it's okay for this to happen around children because it's educational?
Let's put it this way. There's a way to do anything. It's called finesse.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, you can be blatantly obnoxious, or you can be discreet.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, we learn to be somewhat discreet in our actions, going through 12 years of indoctrinated schooling systems, basically.
Repressed and discreet both, yeah.
Oh, yes. So that 12 years was mainly for that purpose, get us ready for a 9-to-5 job and make us basically raise our hand and go to the bathroom, which takes away quite a much of your dignity, wouldn't you say, as a kid?
Oh, particularly when there are no porta-potties downtown, I'll tell you. But that's another story.
Well, they've moved some of them away.
They have.
And that's just to make it more difficult. difficult for people to be out on the street and to make it less convenient. It's all pressure. It's subtle pressure, and it's like built into our system. They always want to have people under the poverty line and struggling, so that the people that are slaving away 9 to 5 of them that look kind of bored with their lives and overweight and kind of glum, generally speaking, so that they'll maintain and keep doing it and paying their taxes to support the war machine, et cetera, which is the way it goes. They don't want people on welfare. They want them to work to pay taxes to support the system. And the same thing with drugs. I feel, as far as drugs go, that it's something you have to experience to know about. And I'm not saying that everyone should do drugs, but everyone, a lot of people have tried beer. A lot of people have maybe tried smoking cigarettes or other things. And that's learning curve. That's learning curve. Now, you don't want to take a hammer and hit yourself in the head just to see what it feels like, but it's not. That's not like taking marijuana. It's not like hitting your head with a hammer on the head or frying an egg in a frying pan.
Well, you're suggesting people try heroin to see what it's like? Or?
I'm not suggesting anybody do anything unless they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not encouraging anybody to do anything unless they want to do it.
No, but are you suggesting that the only way to learn about heroin is to take it?
Well, I would suggest that the first step would be to talk to someone that does take it or use it and talk to them about it and see what the story is and see if they have any desire to follow through on that interest. I mean, that's called communication. And our society doesn't like us to communicate to each other. We're all like isolated individuals going on our quest for success, whatever that means, trying to find our way. But we need communication, community, and awareness by sharing our feelings and our experiences together in an open forum where people don't feel threatened.
Got some good thoughts there, caller. I'm gonna roll on you. But
that's good. I'm glad you have a show, and it's great.
Hey, call again.
Thanks.
Incredible points. Being as I've seen someone's life, and actually a lot of people's lives, go down the drain because of heroin, I mean, of course, it starts innocently enough, and then either the pain goes away or, I don't know, anything, and then you have an addiction, like a hardcore addiction. So anyways, I was wondering what I would do if my kid came up to me and said, what's heroin about? And what I basically came up with is that I would be totally honest. I'd say, well, it's a lot of fun, but the main problem is, if you don't know who you are, if you have issues, a variety of consciousness needs to be brought into using heroin. This is me talking to my kid, if you're not ready to deal with all the issues that go along with it, it could turn into something that's fun, into a horrible nightmare that's like almost impossible to get rid of.
And we also all have to remember you were also talking about the importance of having heroin available to people who need it medically, which is a wholly separate issue. You talk about recreational use of heroin. I'm kind of dismayed when I talk to so-called enlightened individuals like new DA Bob Lee, who won the battle over Kate Canlis recently, which I suppose was a victory. I think he won by 300, and I voted for him, holding my nose. But when I talked to him, he knew nothing about injection rooms or inhalation rooms that are being used in Switzerland, for example, for heroin users there, and for crack users as well. Safe places where people can go to use drugs rather than, risk spreading illnesses, fatal illnesses like HIV, risk injuring themselves and injuring others, and creating a spectacle, frankly, on the streets by doing that as well, which is, alarming the horses and disturbing the middle class, always one of the big crimes in our society. There's no move on the part of either the DA's office, the Board of Supervisors, the City Council, to take any move to deal with real education and real solutions that are being tried in other countries around these drugs. Now, some will tell me, well, first you got a federal establishment that is, horrendously repressive in its crazy terrorist drug war, and that's true. But you also have people fighting back initially at the county level in 1992 or 3 here in Santa Cruz. We passed one of the first initiatives to decriminalize medical marijuana, to make it legal, and that spread to the state in 1996. So I don't see any reason why that can't be done here, and you can start at the city council level. You can start at the level of your block by educating people, by going out there with flyers, by spreading the word and the information about what's happening. I'd like to shift, though, from the subject we're talking about here, because you've done a number of things that I think I'd like to comment on. I'd like to get you to comment on. You started Pomona Food Not Bombs. That's isn't Pomona some kind of middle-class community in Southern California that I always confuse with other middle-class communities like Simi Valley or something? What is Pomona anyway?
Well, where I grew up, which is Claremont, that's definitely middle-class suburbs of L.A. Pomona is sort of, it used to be a beautiful place that I heard on I Love Lucy one time. They were going to go visit Pomona, and now it's pretty much kind of run down. There are some...
So it's not Pasadena or something?
No.
So how did you begin this? You began a Food Not Bombs down there. That's, of course, the organization we have here at Santa Cruz, feeds 3 times a week. I would tell you the phone number if I could see it around here. Unfortunately, it isn't easily posted. By the way, if you have any questions that you don't want to put on the air but you want to direct to me, my number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's a voicemail. You can call it right now. Leave a message. I'll get back to you after the show. Or you can call the show. Phone line is 427-3772. In the studio with me is Lydia, and we are going through a number of subjects before she dashes off to do some work. Pomona, you started a Food Not Bombs. How'd that happen?
Well, the story was when I turned 16, me and my friends were exploring all the freeways and where they led us. And we ended up in Whittier, California, which is probably 40 minutes away from my house. And we were just walking along the street and we met this guy named Matt. And he started telling us about a court hearing, which, you know, one of the members of Food Not Bombs in Whittier were getting tried for giving a free hamburger, free burrito out. So we got interested and we're like, wow, I think...
Tried for? You mean they were going to jail for giving out free hamburgers?
Yeah.
And what year was this?
This was probably 96.
That's the same year I went to jail for a month for giving out bagels and salad in San Francisco. Yeah, I remember that year.
Yeah. So I don't remember if it was the first time I heard about Food Not Bombs. I don't remember that. But we were like, whoa, we can really do this. So we went back, and a few of us called the local like supermarket down there, and we asked them if we could get some donations. And so it basically started with going to someone's house every Sunday morning. We only did it once a week on Sundays. Someone would go about 9 in the morning, pick up all these old vegetables, and we just cooked them, and it was... all our friends got involved, like 15 of us, and we went down to this site in Pomona where there's, like, Claremont doesn't have, maybe had, like, one homeless person before this person was hit by a car and killed. So we went to Pomona, which has a pretty large population of homeless people.
How large is Pomona?
I don't really know. There are probably, 70,000 people there,
uh-huh.
Maybe?
A little bit bigger than Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So there's a lot of homeless people, and we found a spot by the train tracks that was in a kind of industrial area. Somebody called the police to tell them that we were going to be giving out food in that location. We never had a problem with them for 4 or 5 years. What else? We had fundraisers. We made, like, screen-printed T-shirts. We had fundraisers. There was a youth activity center around there that had shows.
How many people would you say you fed, and how often did you feed them?
Okay, once a week we fed probably 50 people,
mm-hmm.
And we had like a little educational booth with condoms and, you know, stuff like that.
Fuck clean, shoot clean?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we didn't give out needles or anything, but
right.
It was just information, condoms. Mm-hmm. And it was really beautiful, and then me and all my friends, which were probably, I don't know, 12 of us, we left to go to college, and there were some younger kids that were there, and I guess they pulled it off for about 3 years until they started having difficulties with the police around there. Someone got a ticket for giving food. I don't really know what happened.
I expect you to investigate that and get back to us.
Yeah, if I can find some phone numbers.
So that's another thing you've worked with is Food Not Bombs. We have, of course, Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz, as I mentioned, that feeds 3 days a week. Monday it feeds, I guess, from across from Cinema 9 at 4 o'clock, is it? It also feeds on Saturdays and on Wednesdays at the Farmer's Market, also at 4 o'clock. I think the Saturday feeding may be at 2 o'clock at the town clock, and I could have some of this wrong. If anybody's listening from Food Not Bombs or who has a schedule, please give a call in. I'm looking around. I guess I can't find anything posted. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And again, if you want to join this conversation, have any questions, reactions, want to give us some spare change or seek some spare change, 427-3772. That's what we call public panhandling. And, of course, we won't call the police because we only have one line. We couldn't call the police. So the question for me is, what can people do in Santa Cruz to change this ironclad mythology or mindset, which is it has to do with marijuana too. There is an increasing and continuing war on marijuana users nationwide and locally. I don't think it's stopped in spite of all the feel-good propaganda and bullshit you get from the city council. What's your take on that, Lydia?
Well, I've never been in the county jail in an actual cell where people have been, are waiting for their trial. But from what I've heard, there is a vast amount of people that are in there for petty things like marijuana, like being next to a bag that had marijuana and being, told that it's theirs and being arrested for that. I don't really know too much about the marijuana scene or who's being tried for it. All I know is that a lot of people in county jail, especially men, are in there for heroin use. I don't know, I think addiction is complex. I think a lot of it stems from mental pain that people haven't been able to deal with, so they medicate themselves to feel good with heroin, because it makes your brain feel good, it makes your body feel good. And I guess, the society doesn't let men specifically express themselves or feel their pain. So I think that's why a lot of men are in prison and jail for drug offenses.
Well, perhaps now is the time to invite you to come to the, and all you out there listening, to the Right to Sleep Summit, which is coming up in Santa Cruz. It's a summit which doesn't have anything to do with heroin use and doesn't have anything to do with Food Not Bombs, although Food Not Bombs and heroin users may both be there, for all I know. But what we're concerned about is the right of homeless people to be able to sleep legally in Santa Cruz, which is an endless struggle, it seems like. We have a city sleeping ban in place that criminalizes sleeping nightly from 11 to 8:30 in the morning, $54 fine, 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people space in the so-called shelter system for only, less than 40 of them as of April 15th when the Winter Armory shelter closed down. So we're looking for solutions like Camp Dignity or Dignity Village, as it's called in Portland, Oregon, Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz, Isla Vista, it's called TP Village or Camp Home Sweet Home, depending on who you talk to, down there in Santa Barbara. Homeless people have gotten together, formed their own encampments. And one of the issues, of course, that comes up in such things is, what do you do about not just illegal drug use, but, hey, even legal drug use? I mean, of course, the lethal drug and the dangerous drug, alcohol, which produces more violence than all the other drugs put together, is... it's a perennial problem throughout the society, and it's a particular problem for people in homeless groups because they live in a fishbowl, and they are visible 24 hours a day, really. I mean, insofar as if it's illegal to sleep in a community, then the police have the option to move in and demand that, not just that they move, but search them, question them, because they're engaging in criminal behavior. And if police have reason to believe a crime is being committed, then they can begin this whole process of stripping you of your privacy, of your dignity, and, of course, of your security. And that's what happens in Santa Cruz and in other communities. You can use heroin if you're in a house, indoors, in privacy, and if you're able to continue maintain your career and maintain your life that way, you can do that. And I don't know if I'd recommend it or not. You probably know more about heroin use than I do, since you've been working with heroin users. But if you try to do that as a homeless person, you're up shit creek pretty fast. Although, there's a great mythology that the major, drug abusers are somehow homeless people, and that these are the people who create all the problems. In fact, I'm going to talk about a nasty editorial from Don Hubbard, the Harvey West Association a bigot in chief, who actually I like as a person, by the way. He's a nice guy. He's also a bigot in chief, unfortunately, or chief bigot. Any comments on any of that, Lydia? Don't feel obliged.
I don't know even where to begin. Every time you say something, it's like all these thoughts run off in my mind. What were you talking about?
put that needle away. No, just kidding, folks.
The fishbowl.
And I was inviting you to come to the Right to Sleep Summit. Because I think that one of the issues is going to be drug use, not in terms of how can we get these people into Synanon or whatever they're doing these days, or Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, but you know, what about people's rights to use the drugs they need to use? What do you, you know, or choose to use? You know, and what do you do in homeless encampments in the situation? Of course, I'm pretty sure that one of the major answers is going to be you're just going to have to bite the bullet and either conceal your use or give it up, because you cannot maintain a high profile like that and maintain community support. The community is not sufficiently advanced to do that, and the risks of, you know, the such homeless communities imploding is too great. Your thoughts?
Well, I just did a paper on homeless drug use, and it's impossible to sum up in a few sentences, but basically homeless youth, homeless veterans, people that are homeless because of mental issues, people that choose to be homeless for whatever reasons, all those things need to be, I don't even know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think that you're talking about a variety of groups that have problems that need to be addressed in a sort of a, well, I mean, the number of problems that arise kind of commingle and become a huge problem. I'm not too sure what you're trying to say either.
Well, pretty much when a homeless person has a drug problem, mm-hmm. most of their effort and money and time go into trying to get, you know, their next hit so they can be normal. Because after a while, heroin use, you have to do it just to be normal, just to deal with the daily issues of getting food and finding a place to sleep. So when it's, you know, if it was legal, you know, it would be a much reduced price. People could go to a place and not have to worry about getting busted. There'd be a probably safe place where they could do it, so they didn't have to use river water and, you know, subject themselves to all kinds of diseases. Basically, it's really sad that people are forced to deal with this. If it was legal, it would be much different. But homeless people, if they do it for whatever reasons, because of mental pain, there needs to be places that deal with counseling and, you know, job skills. And, I mean, there's just such a, it just goes into a vortex of all the kinds of needs
that
need to be addressed.
I get nervous people talk about counseling and job skills. I don't think it's that homeless people don't have job skills. It's they don't have a place to live.
Exactly.
You know, so how are you gonna get a job? And you also have a problem in that the jobs around here don't pay shit. You cannot get a place to live on the kind of wages that they offer you in many or most of the jobs that are available. Lydia, I appreciate your being with us. Is there, and you're welcome to hang in there as sort of a, you know, as a catch some phone calls, and maybe we can get some reactions as I rant on. We're talking with Lydia
Harari.
Thank you. Lydia Harari. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is 15.
The homeless, a problem for only one reason. Their president raises the question, who wants a ranch? The homeless, a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who wants a ranch? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all materialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got the right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. As if you didn't know, those of you who have been actually listening to the show, I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrobe's Piers Broadsides. We give it to the broadsides of those sleepy heads on the city council and elsewhere who should be dealing with the problem of ending the drug war, ending the war on terrorism, ending the war on the homeless, but instead they're just doing their own thing and filing 200-page documents against those of us who are. What am I talking about? Well, I've got a document here which is a 200-page document which is a response to my lawsuit against the City Council. You may remember when we left off last week, I was dragged from council chambers, held in jail for 5.5 hours, and then charged with a misdemeanor of disrupting a public assembly for giving a Heil Krone salute when the mayor, Mayor Chris Krone, refused to allow a woman to speak who, according to his own rules, had the right to do that. I didn't interrupt him verbally. I just made a brief, sarcastic gesture, which was a arm raised in the form of a Nazi salute, which indicated, aren't you acting like a Nazi here, folks? And his response actually was nothing. He didn't even see it, but Fitzmaurice, other council member who was observing and who has, I must say, a hard-on to get rid of me under these circumstances, he had me pointed out and expelled from the council chambers. I refused to go, and I was arrested, handcuffed, taken off to jail. The officer refused to take my counter-complaint against the mayor for making a false police report because the crime which I was accused of, which was disrupting a public meeting, didn't happen. There was no disruption. They may not have liked what I did. It may have been indecorous. They may have thought it was offensive to those of Jewish heritage. They may not have liked it for their own reasons, but it didn't stop the meeting. They stopped their meeting, and they stopped me from attending their meeting, which is a violation of the First Amendment and the Brown Act. And accordingly, Sergeant Baker should have taken a complaint. He should have taken a complaint against Mayor Krone because I was not arrested by the police for committing a crime. I was arrested on what's called a citizen's complaint from the mayor. An individual citizen claimed I was committing a crime. Sergeant Baker should have known better. He was standing there observing me. He knew I was committing no crime. So he actually was complicit in this essential conspiracy to shut down critics at City Council. It is a conspiracy in the sense that people are working together consciously to violate basic constitutional rights. You might say, what's the big deal over a Nazi salute? Why don't you show a little more class here? The answer is, sometimes you have to make a quick gesture at a council, A, to let them know what you think, B, to reaffirm that you are an independent individual and are not going to be intimidated by a set of rules that violates the First Amendment, and C, sometimes you act spontaneously. And provided you aren't violating the law, there should be no repressive reaction from council on that, or they should be held accountable. And that is what I'm trying to do by taking them to federal court, which is the first time I've ever been in a federal court in this on the litigating end. I've been taken to federal court myself for occupying wary housing up in San Francisco. We tried to occupy military housing to return it to homeless people, and we failed. I think we got it actually into the hands of students, so in a way we succeeded. That was 5-6 years ago. That was a religious witness for the homeless. But I have never actually gone into federal court doing a federal lawsuit. I know people who have. Activist Becky Johnson, the video journalist who actually took the video of me doing the infamous Heil Krone at City Council on March 12th, herself just won a lawsuit against the infamous LAPD, the Los Angeles Police Department. She was beaten back in August or September of 2000, and she won a significant amount of money. Not going to say how much, because that would be telling. In fact, I've already told, but I'm not going to tell again. If you missed it the first time, you lose. But she got a significant chunk of money by going into federal court. And I was very skeptical. I'm skeptical of courts, and I know others who are quite properly skeptical of courts. I think that it's mass action on the streets and mass action, mass nonviolent direct action that has the better chance of succeeding. But you also should not preclude other alternatives, and courts are another prospect of making, to some extent, creating public embarrassment for city officials who have to explain themselves. And that's why I went to federal court. I went to federal court also because two attorneys volunteered to do this. I would never have tried to do it myself. They are doing it pro bono. They are doing it hoping to get their costs paid back when the federal court says, no, you can't jail someone for a silent gesture from the audience because you don't like the gesture. That, unfortunately, you're a city council member. You got to learn to have a somewhat thicker skin. Your job is to deal with different kinds of opinion. And I'm going to be really kind of terrified if I don't get that from the federal court. I'm thinking that we have to get that from the federal court, and we will get that. And I'm asking people out there, and that's you, listeners, to sit down right now and recollect any time in the last few years, not when you've been kicked out of city council or not when you've been personally abused by city council, where you've been sitting in city council or sitting in front of a television set and seen that happen to somebody else. And it chilled you. It made you feel, this is something that makes me not want to go to city council. This is something that makes me afraid to even be around or just discouraged from getting involved in this process at all. That is what we're trying to get from the federal courts. We're trying to get from the federal courts an injunction against the so-called decorum rules of former mayor and now current Fitzmaurice and now current mayor Chris Crone. The landlord who poses as a rent control supporter but doesn't seem to want to introduce rent control ever, no matter how many times you phone him on the subject or try to raise the issue. That's Christopher Crone, the man with the liberal label, but apparently the repressive pattern of practice, the pattern of behavior and the practice at the city council, which we're going to try to change. So do give a call to 423-HUFF. I've called a lot of you individually and asked you to write up statements about what you've seen there, and that could be any time in the last 3 years when you've seen something that has chilled you. And if you want to see something chilling, in a way kind of also kind of funny, you can actually see the video of me being arrested and what I did at City Council that prompted the City Council to have me arrested, or Mayor Crone, actually, on prompting from Councilmember Fitzmaurice, the Heil Crone salute that I gave off to the side. That is at the website, and grab a pencil, and it's an easy website to get to. It's www.santacruz.org. So again, that's santacruz.indymedia.org. And then you just go to the Robert Norris arrested at City Council, and you can see photos, and you can see the video, you can hear the tape, you can even read the lawsuit. And pretty soon you'll be able to read the city's reply, which I have in my hand. It was a 200-page document in response to our, I guess, 10-page lawsuit. And the 200-page document is quite a document. It's actually pretty empty stuff, but I'm going to be talking about that just to kind of give folks out there an update as to what's going on with this lawsuit. But we need within a week to get your declarations as to where and when you have observed the city council, either on the air, through television, or personally. It's also possible, conceivable, to say that you have heard of incidents that happened that made you not want to go there, if that hearing that you heard, if the information you got was accurate information, and that you were deterred from going to city council because of what you learned was the pattern and practice of repression that the city council has practiced for the last 3 years, actually for a much longer period of time than that, but certainly for the last 3 years, that's what we're looking at under the new city council, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and under the previous council, Rotkin, Kennedy, Matthews, Byers, and so forth. So do give a call to 427-3772 if you have any thoughts on this issue. Why is it important? How does it relate to homeless people? Why is it isn't just Robert Norris dancing around, making an ass of himself, and showing off and to trying to get the limelight and the media publicity? No, what it is it's me. Well, it was me refusing to leave the council when the council decided it was going to pull yet another repressive move, and then reacting. And I thought, fairly strategic manner when they really blew it and they overstepped their guidelines. But what I'm trying to do is restore to the community some basic rights to be able to speak at City Council without being interrupted. You may remember yesterday's Sentinel has a story about this woman who was interrupted by the mayor and then by Councilmember Sugar. She was talking about a heritage tree and how she was upset that the mayor walked on her property and so forth.